What's going on, Vinyl Community? You are listening to The Record Spinner here on Vinyl Community Podcasts, and welcome to another episode of a series that I am hosting exclusively here on the podcast called Current Rotations, where I discuss all of the records that I have been spinning as of lately on my turntable. It has been a long time since I have last done an episode for this series, and I want to give my sincerest apologies for as much as I have been wanting to fill you guys in on what I've been listening to. Life has been going on around me. I'm coming and going by the day, it seems like. But I'm swearing at the time, and I'm going to keep you guys in the loop as to what I've been spinning. And let's just say we have a good bit of variety here. We have some Pink Floyd and Genesis bootlegs. We have some Modern Flourishes with Hozier, the newest album from Ace Frehley, and much, much more. It's about to go deep, so without further ado, let's jump into what I've been spinning as of lately. So if you follow me on social media, you are probably aware that I hosted the Kiss Vinyl Extravaganza on Whatnot recently. And if you're living under a rock and you don't know what Whatnot is, it is an app that allows sellers around the world to conduct live stream auctions. Think of it as eBay meets Twitch. But nonetheless, the two Kiss Vinyl theme shows that I conducted on the platform were very, very successful. And it kind of sort of rekindled my love for the app, because while it was great to host some shows on the platform, I was also a frequent buyer on the platform, just checking out random shows and auctioning on cool things that kind of caught my eye. And I kind of, you know, slipped under the radar a little bit in recent months. But since I kind of worked myself back into the platform, I have been checking out other shows and I've been getting my hands on some really cool stuff. One of which is a Pink Floyd bootleg that I think I should have always owned in my collection, but just never got around to owning. And that is Live at the Concertgebouw in Amsterdam on September 17th, 1969. So the recording from this show consists of Pink Floyd performing The Man and the Journey, which was sort of their first theatrical rock suite, which kind of set the blueprint for things like Dark Side of the Moon to come in the future. But this suite was kind of patterned out by older songs that appeared on other albums, some freshly made material at the time, instrumental segments and improvisations, all kinds of stuff. Now, The Man and the Journey never really got a release, you know, as part of Pink Floyd's discography back in the day. I personally think in retrospect, it would have made more of an obvious and interesting choice for them to put that out instead of putting out, let's say, the Umma Gumma album, you know, for example. But nonetheless, history pans out the way it pans out. Now, there are many different bootleg recordings of Pink Floyd performing this suite live in concert. There's the opening night from the Royal Festival Hall. There's also the show from the Royal Albert Hall, which has a choir and a brass section, and it ends with some cannons going off. That's a really great listen. But if you're looking for the best sounding one, this radio broadcast from Amsterdam is the way to go. And it has been bootlegged for a number of years. And it actually did get an official release as part of the Pink Floyd Early Years box set back in 2016. And I was honestly always kind of hoping that maybe they would go about releasing that on vinyl officially. But right now, with the sort of 50-year copyright rule that kind of goes on in the music circles, this show is now essentially slipping through the sort of, as I call them, legal bootleg cracks. It's a gray area. It's still unofficial, but yet the recording has been licensed properly and legally for it to, you know, kind of be sold. But I don't know. It's a weird kind of area, but it's one that is intriguing, and it kind of offers itself for a lot of cool releases. But anyways, there are a couple of legal bootleg releases of this show, but this one that I picked up that was on the label DBQP is actually really solid, because while The Man and the Journey kind of takes up roughly an hour plus worth of music, this release kind of condenses it all into one LP. So side A is like The Man, and then side B is The Journey. So obviously on The Man side, you have tracks like Grantchester Meadows, Biding My Time, and Cymbeline, as well as an instrumental called Work, which has some like syncopated like percussion with xylophone and such. It's really interesting. And then side B has Green is the Color and Careful with That Axugene, The Narrow Way, Power Talk H, and the end segment of A Saucer Full of Secrets. And it sounds, to be quite honest with you, as if it was sourced from the early years set. So it sounds really, really good. Who really knows that this will get a full-on vinyl pressing in its entirety? But until then, this legal bootleg will certainly do me well. And it's definitely one of my favorite Pink Floyd bootlegs to own. No, I am not firm in my ways of older music. I do enjoy me some new music as well. The thing with the new music these days is that there are tons of great bands and great artists out there. You just have to seek it out for yourself. And obviously that's why, you know, streaming services are great for kind of discovering some fresh music or maybe buying an album out of impulse or word of mouth. But on occasion, I will dabble a little bit into the mainstream, and it is thanks to my girlfriend Abby for gifting me this record for Valentine's Day. And coincidentally, this is an album that I have been almost curious on getting for the past almost 10 years, dare I say it, and that is the self-titled debut album of Hozier. Now, Hozier is an Irish folky singer-songwriter. He has a really great style, and he's great at what he does, and his first album, which came out back in 2014, has always sort of caught my eye and has been loosely on my horizon because of the opening track, which was also his sort of breakout hit, Take Me to Church, which I absolutely adored back when I was a senior in high school. And because of that, I always wanted to check the album out for myself. But it was always one of those things where, like, it was just low on the priority list and other things took precedence. But Hozier is Abby's favorite artist, and I actually did gift her tickets to see him on his upcoming American tour this upcoming May. And I guess I always joked, I'm like, you know, if I could use some Hozier records to brush up on his material since we're going. But needless to say, she gifted me with this album. And it's funny because once I got to listening to other tracks on this album, it kind of sent me back a little nostalgic rabbit hole because I could almost close my eyes and place myself back in high school and be like, wow, I actually do remember hearing this. And I know that, you know, this song is off of this album. So it was kind of like a time traveling kind of thing. But it's thanks to Abby that she made a 10-year process finally happen. Okay, it's the Record Spinner here. We got to throw in some Kiss flair when we need to. So one of my latest Kiss bootleg acquisitions, which oddly enough, I have not unboxed yet on YouTube. I filmed one and I don't know when it's going to go up, but I figured I would make mention of it now just so people are aware of what is currently out there in the bootleg circles. And that is the Chronicles of the Elder box set. Now, what exactly is this box set? So this is a 4LP collection of various demos and outtakes and alternate versions of recordings from the music from the Elder period. And it's quite in depth in terms of like the initial beginnings of the Elder project, because you can hear some demos of tracks like Deadly Weapons, Feels Like Heaven, and Nowhere to Run. Obviously the latter track was featured on the Killers compilation from 1982. So they kind of had their eyes set on doing initially a sort of hard rock kind of album, but then it just shifted into this whole thing where Gene had this concept and Bob Ezrin said, yes, that's the way we got to go. And, you know, The Elder is an album that, as a Kiss fan, you either love or you hate. There is no being in the middle of it. I am one that absolutely adores The Elder. You know, maybe it's because I'm a progressive rock fan and, you know, I can appreciate that notion. But also, just given how much I love Kiss and I embrace what they do best, to see them go completely left field and try something, and to think at the time that they believed that this was their masterpiece, is just such an interesting album to just wrap your head around, because it is the antithesis of what Kiss is all about. You have lush orchestrations, you have choirs, you have all this balladry, you have Paul Stanley singing falsetto in one of the opening tracks. For as much as it has its differences, there are some really great songs such as A World Without Heroes, The Oath, I, things like that. But anyways, enough babbling about the album. I should talk about the bootleg. So there's recordings that kind of stem from the origins of the project, and then you hear each member's sort of respective demos that they brought to the table. You hear some Ace Frehley things. You hear roughly, what, six different takes of Just a Boy. You hear early versions of A World Without Heroes, Escape from the Island. You also have a couple of live recordings. By live, I mean TV appearances for when they appeared on Fridays, which was basically the only real live performance they gave to promote the album, since there was not a tour to support it. But the box set itself is beautifully put together. It's pressed on pink vinyl. There's a nice little booklet with a poster. I don't want to give too much away because you should see it for yourself. But let me tell you, the sound quality is absolutely fantastic. There's moments where it sounds as crystal clear as a professionally mastered recording. Some of the demos and other things do sound like, you know, lossy bootleg quality type sources, but still passable to be enjoyable. So if you're in the know of anyone that is out there in various Facebook groups, as I like to allude to, that sells these sets, seek it out for yourself if you want to experience a bizarre period of Kiss-tory. Now we're going to keep things further in the Kiss vein, and I'm going to shine a light on the newest solo release from the original Spaceman himself, Ace Frehley's 10,000 Volts. Now, I do have to say, out of any Kiss member that has come and gone over the course of 50 years, Ace Frehley has had a remarkably prolific solo career. Obviously, after he had left Kiss in 1982... he formed the Frehley's Comet Band, put out a couple of albums, and then he also released the Trouble Walkin' solo album in the late 80s. Then he kind of went, you know, under the radar, toured solo, rejoined Kiss, and then once he made his exit again, since 2009, he has put out a string of solo albums. There was Anomaly, then 2014's Space Invader, then 2018's Spaceman, and then in between all that, there have been the various Origins albums, which consists of just, you know, covers albums, essentially, of his influences and songs and bands that he likes, which are all very enjoyable. All of his solo records are solid. You know, it's Ace. He knows what he does best, and he embraces it. But let me tell you, with 10,000 Volts, with the assistance of Steve Brown, who was in Trickster, with him in the producer's chair, they have sculpted such a brilliant, concise record that is brilliantly arranged with some glossy production, you know, aspects behind it, which, you know, it is what it is. I wish maybe it was a bit more grittier and raw, but nonetheless, it still sounds great. The opening title track was the first single off of it, which is just absolutely rocking and catchy. But even some of the other songs that have come out as singles, such as Walking on the Moon, Cherry Medicine, it's just pure ear candy. And then once the album came out and I got to experience it on vinyl, other tracks such as Fighting for Life, Back into My Arms Again, Life of a Stranger, the closing instrumental Stratosphere, it is just absolutely brilliant. And, you know, who's to say how many more albums Ace has in him, but hypothetically speaking, if this was to be a sort of, you know, a closing curtain, then damn, what a way to kind of cap things off. But I think he might have another album or two left in him. That's just me being optimistic. I'm not trying to sound, you know, morbid by any means. But anyways, when it comes to vinyl, let's just say the label that Ace is now with, MNRK, they are well aware of the rabid Kiss vinyl collecting circles, not just with Kiss themselves, but Kiss associated things. There has been more than 10 different variants of 10,000 Volts that have come out. The ones that I got were the first two variants that were offered on the web store. There was a clear vinyl with red, blue, and silver splatter version, which I believe is limited to 1,750. And then there was an alternate album cover version, which is kind of just like a plain black cover with Ace Frehley 10,000 Volts with a lightning bolt and silver. That I believe was limited to, I want to say, around 500 to 700 copies. I got those two. But then, of course, there have been numerous colored variants. There was also even cover variants for the main singles Walking on the Moon and Cherry Medicine, which looked fantastic, and I was so close to pre-ordering those, and then when one sold out, I couldn't just get, you know, the other one. I wanted to get them both together, so I kind of just dug my heels in, and I'm just sticking with the main two that I have. But hey, two is better than one. But seriously, if anyone has the Walking on the Moon and Cherry Medicine ones, please send me an email. I will gladly get it out of your hands. Next up is a really solid upgrade that I got of an album that I already had in my collection, but I always kind of knew that when I first bought this particular version, there was probably better out there. And sure enough, there was. And that is the Mobile Fidelity Sound Lab pressing of the Cars self-titled debut album. What can be said about the Cars debut? It's one of the best debuts of all time, and it's one of those debut albums that plays like a greatest hits. You have Good Times Roll, My Best Friend's Girl, Just What I Needed, You're All I Got Tonight, Moving in Stereo. It is absolutely sensational from start to finish. Now, what I had previously in my collection was, I believe, a Rhino sort of Start Your Ear Off Right release, or Rocktober, one of those sort of Rhino pressings from 2016, which came pressed on blue vinyl, which looked really cool. And I think it sounded, to be honest, it sounded decent to my ears. But once I came across the MoFi pressing, I knew that I had to make a choice. And this is kind of coming off the heels of when Rhino has been doing that sort of high fidelity audiophile series, because when they dropped their first batch of releases, the Cars debut was a part of it, and that was cut by Kevin Gray, but unfortunately that has sold out and the resale value is kind of high on it. But here's the kicker with this MoFi pressing from 2009. It is an all analog pressing. Now obviously that sort of contradicts the modern hoopla. Is a hoopla at this point? I feel like the craze is done about MoFi using DSD transfers and such as their source. Obviously, you know, in this case of the Cars album, they use, you know, whatever original tapes they can kind of get their hands on. And by all means, it sounds absolutely great. Moving in Stereo is absolutely enticing with the way that, you know, each mix component kind of pans between the speakers. It's very punchy. It's full. You can really get a sense of just how grand the arrangements are and how precise and tight they are with this pressing. And as far as I know, I think it's, you know, currently back in print and you can still get your hands on copies. So if you see it out in the wild, don't be sleeping on it. Is it a cardinal sin to mention Mobile Fidelity and Analog Productions in the same episode? I don't think so. It's all subjective and it all sounds great. But anyways, the next record that I'm going to discuss is one that has a really cool backstory as to how I acquired it. And that is the fact that Chad Kasem had actually sent me this record as a promo. Now, Chad is the CEO of Analog Productions, Acoustic Sounds, and Quality Record Pressings. And of course, Chad is chummy with Michael Fremmer, who is my boss slash senior editor over at trackingangle.com. And I did write a review of the Analog Productions pressing of Genesis Selling England by the Pound, which is part of their collaboration with Atlantic Records for their 75th anniversary. They're doing all these 2LP 45 RPM vinyl pressings and super audio CDs. Needless to say, I gave it a very pleasing review, and not biased as well, because it really is probably the greatest sounding pressing of that album that you'll ever hear. So I got an email recently from Michael saying, hold off on ordering Alice Cooper's Welcome to My Nightmare. Chad is going to send you a copy. And obviously, I had my eyes on getting that album because I am an Alice Cooper freak. And it is probably the greatest Alice Cooper solo album that is out there. Of course, Welcome to My Nightmare was his first solo album after the Alice Cooper group had disbanded. He got back together with Bob Ezrin and put out this concept album about this kid named Steven and all of these these nightmares that he experiences. It is theatrical. It is full of 70s camp. It is just absolutely fantastic. And I don't want to spoil too much because I wrote a review for Tracking Angle, but let's just say Bob Ezrin's production style is cinematic in a way that it deserves to be heard in this fashion of 2LP 45 RPM cut from the original master tapes, which God knows when the last time that honestly was, because Welcome to My Nightmare has been reissued a couple of times over the years, but some of the rhino pressings that I've heard, it just sounds like the life has been sucked out of the recording, and it's nice that for once there's a 180 done, and this Analog Productions pressing can go down for simply being the greatest sounding pressing of this album. To be honest, I think with every album that's part of the series, you know, history is bound to rewrite itself. You know, of course, the original pressing is always going to be the basis and blueprint for comparison, but when you factor in the fact that they are going through the extreme measures of using that master tape and presenting these albums in such an exquisite fashion, with these laminated tip-on glossy jackets with nice rice paper inner sleeves and all aspects of artwork replicated, you know, it's truly a product of immense quality, and I cannot be happier with this series, and I cannot thank Chad enough for sending me a copy of this record to review and to have in my collection. And he also sent me another album as well, but I can't talk about that now. Maybe in another episode. Last but not least, I'm going to focus in on another legal bootleg type release, kind of similar to the Pink Floyd one, that sort of has a quasi-official type history behind it. And that is Nassau Coliseum 1981, the Long Island broadcast. So this is of a recording of a show from the Nassau Coliseum in New York on November 29th, 1981. And this show was also recorded for the Three Sides live album, which came out in 1982. So obviously this show is from the Abacab tour. And let me tell you, when I put this on, I could have sworn that I was listening to like a rough mix of Three Sides live. It sounds that good. It sounds almost so close to being an official type release. But what's cool with this release is that it does have some tracks that did not appear on the final Three Sides live album, such as No Reply at All, Firth or Fifth, Man on the Corner, Dance in a Volcano. So it's kind of like a sort of companion to the Three Sides live sort of album, but it just sounds absolutely great. And when it comes to bootlegs, look, I am more than willing to accept that the sound quality will be what it is depending on the source and its history, but to have something in this sort of quasi-official kind of vein in terms of where it kind of stems from and where else it's featured in Genesis's own official discography, this was a major feast for the ears. I know that it's probably up on YouTube somewhere, or it's on CD elsewhere, but if you ever see Genesis Nassau Coliseum 1981 and you are a fan of that Abacab Three Sides Live era, you will not be disappointed. Take it from the record spinner himself. So there you guys go. That wraps up another episode of Current Rotations, a series that I, the record spinner, am hosting exclusively here on Vinyl Community Podcasts. See you guys in the next episode, and most importantly, keep the records spinning.